What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Sorry that we are a bit late. We are waiting for the rebroadcast, of course, to finish. And now that it is over, Inside the Game is live. This is episode 43 on May 22nd, 2012. I'm DJ Weef, joined as always by Check 6 Pain user EG Idra and EG In Control. Fellas, hello. How are you? And what's been up this week, man?
A lot of StarCraft.
A lot of StarCraft.
Yeah. A lot of StarCraft.
This weekend was late nights because we had the GSL finals, the pro leagues going on the off hours of MLG Spring Arena. We're going to chat about all of those tonight. And, you know, I mean, honestly, maybe we should just jump right into it. We were late, you know, skip the formalities. First, I want to thank our sponsor, SteelSeries, Monster Energy, and Six Pool Gaming. And I think we should just jump right into Pro League, actually. I don't know what you guys think about
that.
Let's
do it.
Sure. I think it was certainly one of the most interesting things to witness this weekend. I had the pleasure of watching it HDMI from laptop to the television with a few folks, Slasher, Idra, Evoli. Stefano was there for a little bit but got bored because of the Brood War. I don't know Thorzane who else was with the Thorzane was there, right.
Yes, got bored.
And
no
you know,
way.
Yep.
It got a little bored, man.
I liked it.
Our players. They have way too much time between games. I can kind of understand it.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah, there was a lot of time between games, for sure.
I actually got quite a few questions from people out there that wanted to hear about specific aspects of Pro League from you guys. And you know what? I think that, you know, we're going to talk about it. Was it hype, the expectations, how was it received? But I think the first question from Kimler was probably one of the best. So he says, last week you were pretty critical about it. As a Brood War fan, I agreed. But don't you think it was actually kind of epic? And that would be the first question I guess I would have for you guys. I mean, it was bad, but there was certainly like a coolness to it that it was happening, I think. What do you guys think?
For me, I think it was cool, but I think that was still the hype. Like, when we saw Jadong announced, I was actually really, really excited. I was like, I'm going to get to see Jadong.
He was.
The Legends of Brood War, this guy who was just, like, ridiculously amazing, come and play StarCraft 2. And then it was just like, eh, his mechanics are pretty clean, made some bad decisions, and he got rolled by some Protoss we never heard of.
Wait, the decision, bad decisions as in burrow your roaches, get them in between the force fields, and then unburrow them?
One of the more questionable of those bad decisions.
He's like, oh, I'm sorry, you misplaced his force field. Hang on.
Let me help.
I think the handling of the base race, too, was kind of...
I think the base race itself was kind of okay, but then once he got the roaches up into the natural, he split them, so the warping cleaned it up. If he had just sent all the roaches in the main after filling out the probes, or leave, like, one to kill probes, then maybe it would have been okay.
Yep.
But as is, no, splitting the roaches was bad.
I mean, for me, like, the novelty of it was interesting, so it was definitely something you had to see if you care about the scene, because it's new. It is the introduction of all, like, you know, I think part of this kind of has this, like, okay, when I saw Alien versus Predator Wheat, I was really fucking excited. You take Aliens, this fucking amazing series of movies where there's these monsters that pop out of your chest and turn into bigger monsters, and they eat people, and they got a queen. It's sick,
pretty amazing.
Awesome shit. Then you got Predators. These guys don't need a pack of aliens because individually they're fucking awesome. They're like the Terminator, only organic and cooler looking. You can imagine that. And then they brought it together. What ended up happening was a shitty-ass, terrible, 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 fucking terrible, terrible movie that was horrible. But the whole time I was watching it, I kept telling myself, like, I like this. cool, the alien and the Predator. Like, I wanted to be excited about that. And I felt the same way when I watched Pro League. They were like, and now, Effort and Flash will play. And I was like, Anna, you gotta watch this as history. And the games were subpar, they were okay. Like, I wanted to be impressed by Flash, I really was hoping that he would do really, really well. And I was really hoping Effort would do really well, and there was glimmers of it, but I felt like I was egging on a morbidly obese child on, like, a lot by the price. You wanted it to work, but you knew eventually it was gonna fall over. The Brood War side-by-side with it, I thought was, like, that I actually enjoyed. I liked watching Brood War. I still do. But I felt kind of embarrassed for the people that were coming into it the first time. And then, like, the overall production of this, I did not like the overlay. It looked grainy. It looked really bad. The presentation of the games, just in general, looked very second rate. It looked terrible. The cool things that they did do a good job of is, like, we talked about this before, but the production value of the matches themselves, zooming in on the players.
Dude, dramatic zooms are fucking awesome.
They're amazing. They're
amazing.
But it's so good. It's in sports, man. I don't know why these other leagues, like, opt for the, like, the fishbowl vision of a player in a booth or something
no,
like that.
No.
Let's get a fucking camera on that guy and zoom in on his face when something crazy is happening. Because you're going to get that epic moment when J-Dong's like, I'm going to murder you, or the other guy's like, oh, shit. You're going to get that moment.
There were a few, like flash crushed moments that were incorporated into it that were just kind of like, okay, well, you know.
Flash will let out a twitch or two when the mission starts breaking down, rough, you know. Man. It's like they always catch that perfectly. For me, it was like, the novelty of it is really, well, for me anyway, is just seeing those legendary players play and participate in the tournament. Like, that's the huge excitement for me. But splitting between Brood War and StarCraft II, I think just detracts from the overall excitement of everything. It's like...
And it's going to deteriorate. The players are going to get worse.
It doesn't flow very well.
It's already really bad. Like, last night, I was just watching after I got in, and they had Kanata versus one of the good Protosses. One of the good StarCraft II Protosses, one of the guys clearly a Star 2 focused player, and he tried to do 10-15 range into DT, and it was just like, he looked like a C-level Icy Cup player. It was just an absolute joke. And you're going to have that, because the teams are going to focus more on StarCraft II. That's the future. And it just makes Brood War look terrible, and the games are just going to keep getting worse and worse. And then for
Stork
the production
come out and stays mad, you know? Stork, one of the greatest Protosses in the history of the freaking game StarCraft, came out and said, Kespa doesn't care about Brood War anymore. Like, they've obviously shifted their attention, and you know what? I don't blame Kespa. In fact, the fact that they're still trying to drag... Like, we talked about this last week, but to answer that guy's question, I think we're all going to have problems with this. The two games paired side by side individually has cool aspects that I'm really excited about. I like watching Brood War. I like watching StarCraft II. But trying to get these players to jump through hoops that they're not meant to is making for a bad presentation. It's making for a bad product, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think it's really unfair to the players, too. I mean, forcing them to split their time between the two different games, and what if they don't necessarily even care about or like StarCraft II? You know, it's like taking a bunch of Grandmasters chess players and being like, 3D chess is the shit, like, and making them all play it, you know? It's not necessarily the game that they're in love with or the game that they really want to pursue. I mean, they have similarities, absolutely, but... I don't know. It's just, it's an interesting experiment, but I don't think that it played out in the way that they thought.
And that said, I'll keep watching. You know, I'm going to turn a blind eye to this. I want to see an English stream. I'd be very interested to see who they bring in. I hope that they do update their stream overlays and stuff, because it does feel very
now,
much so.
Now, you guys are aware of the whole HD thing, right?
So you
remember 2010, basically the government put out the regulation, everyone has to broadcast an HD signal, they had all those weird conversion boxes, blah, 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 blah. Korea has done this, but theirs doesn't activate until next year. So OGN and the likes have basically said, we are making the transition to HD 16:9, but they're likely going to be doing it once it's set, which is just amazing that they are not yet.
Yeah, in the meantime, watching Star 2 in 4:3 with the kind of questionable overlays, like the production value in terms of the camera shots and the other stuff we were talking about before, that's great. But other aspects of the production were just light years behind MLG, IPL, all the foreign tournaments we've been watching forever. And it really kind of detracts from it. The only reason I'll keep watching is to see Flash and J-Dong and all of them StarCraft 2. That's the only reason. So it's kind of silly.
Yeah, and the bad production didn't have a cool nostalgic feel to it either. It felt like we were watching a horrific 1980s science fiction movie, like The Last Starfighter, which is Abby's favorite movie.
Dude, The Last Starfighter is kind of badass.
It's hilarious, actually.
He like hits the special button, and it's all dramatic that he just hits one button and his ship shoots everything. Like, I thought he was supposed to be badass. Like, why didn't he just, you know, take the reins? He needed the special power to be. It was the only flaw with that movie in Control. I feel okay. Anyway, Let's a few of the other questions. Actually, Idra, you when we were talking about the Stork thing before the show started, you said that you were actually a bit surprised about to hear Stork kind of say that. You want to elaborate at all?
I just wouldn't have pegged him as the person to come out and talk like that. He never seemed like he was particularly enthusiastic or passionate about anything. He was famous for playing cell phone games and practicing as little as possible and just kind of scraping by on his talent and existing skill. So he didn't seem like he was one of the super passionate players. It kind of surprised me that he would be the one to speak out like that.
So apparently this also says that because of the new Pro League, Stork is going through a lot of distress. During the interview in the reporter's room, tears were welling up in his eyes.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah, that really surprises me.
I guess the position is more like he's just concerned about the players. And he does make one other thing. He says it might not matter to players who earn a lot of money, but as a whole, if the top players and the middle-ranking players don't do well at StarCraft II, it is the end for them.
We can
see these non-famous players, like people you've never heard of before, who are clearly the best Star 2 players in the Pro League. Like, the teams are already grooming players for the transition. And if you're one of those milling StarCraft 1 players who is still stuck playing StarCraft 1 a decent amount of time, you're going to be way behind. And as soon as they're allowed to start poaching Star 2 players, or as soon as Brew Wars phases out, what are those guys going to do? They're just going to be way behind. And they
they're a victim of the product, or of like the environment, but they should be wise enough to like see the coming tide, right? Like, the fact that Brood Wars still being played and discussed right now, like we kind of talked about last episode and we've mentioned now, it's mostly a bad thing, and I think everyone would agree on that. But if you think that there's a future for Brood War, you are some kind of weird hopeful optimistic, right? Like, this will be in my opinion, this is like a 2, maybe 3 season thing at the very most.
Yeah.
And I could be wrong on that. They could drag it on longer, but as far as I'm concerned, if you don't think StarCraft 2 is what's going to carry in the future and you think you're going to play Brood War in 10 years and that's how you're going to make your living, then you're probably really dumb.
Yeah, I mean, right? there's no way. Like, without the support of Blizzard and without the support of the top leagues, I mean, they drive everything, and they're driving StarCraft 2 right now, clearly. And the players have to know that, so it's like, what options do they really have? They're just kind of along for the ride here. KESPA's forcing this on them, and it's like, I don't know. Yeah, it really sucks for the players. That's like, my only concern with it. It's like, if they were to pick up StarCraft 2 and like run a separate league simultaneously and then allow the players that wanted to transition to transition and then eventually maybe just switch over entirely and just kind of let Brood War
the question
die
is
honorably, like
the bigger question though is will there always be an audience to sustain it, because I think one of the biggest fears is that once you hybrid these two that you're going to sort of you're going to have an effect on that audience, where obviously they hope that people will just make this natural transition to StarCraft II, right?
And to your point, someone made that cool argument in one of the threads or a stream chat or something like that. They said, basically, you couldn't just outright old Yeller Brood War, take it up back and shoot it in the fucking head, right? You had to very dramatic, like, very slowly, we're gonna bring them together, and they're, like, secretly behind closed doors going, this is really rough. But they're introducing Brood War fans otherwise wouldn't give StarCraft 2 a chance to StarCraft 2.
Right.
And then they're looking at it and they're going, this is pretty cool, and my favorite players are playing it, and they're speaking highly about it. Right. Okay, I'll give StarCraft 2 a chance.
Right, right. I don't think we're going to be able to see that effect immediately. I don't know.
What was the reasoning for not being able to just kill off Brood War? Like, maybe give it one final season of OSL and then be done with
it. You and I agree, Greg. They should have done that. But they haven't given it the proper dismissal, so now they're stuck in the situation where they're trying to drag it through the hybrid, in my opinion. Like, could you imagine if they announced at the beginning of an OSL season, this is the last OSL season, and we're done. I bet they'd have skyrocketed numbers.
That'd be hyped
as
shit, yeah.
Players crying. They'd have fans tearing their shirts. Girls wouldn't cover their faces. They would show up
They'd
in bikinis.
Proud.
Yeah. It would have been a celebration.
It's still OGN. Like, if you're really, really into gaming, if you're a hardcore Brood War fan, you're probably still going to go check StarCraft 2 out. Like, it's the same company, it's the same players. Yeah. It's not in the same broadcast. Maybe that'll cost them a few new viewers, but I don't think it's that big of an impact. Especially given how bad the current broadcasts are kind of making everything look, relatively speaking.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. The side of the point I just made, or reiterated rather, is that what if people only come for Brood War and then leave, or like, yep, that game's not Brood War.
But that's actually the beauty. Oh, you mean like they'll stay for the first best of three and then they'll just leave? You really think they would?
I think a lot of people who are hardcore Brood War purists and aren't going to switch over to StarCraft 2 anyway, they're just going to leave. They're not going to watch it.
I just think if you're offering both at the same time, it creates an awkwardness where there that is a potential. Whereas if you're like, this is the final season, let's give it... Oh, shut the fuck up. Then there's the potential where you go, that was Brood War, thank you very much, let's make the transition, we're now StarCraft 2. Poa.
Damn it, Poa.
I'm going to have to throw something at her. Watch this. Poa. This is what I'm throwing at the dog.
What was that?
Like a bottle or something.
She's like stuck in her little thing.
Poa.
Poa's got to be a little stressed out. All the people. Dogs.
All right, so here's some of the other questions that came up. Were you surprised that some of the players were as bad as they were?
No.
No.
Not at all.
You'd be kind of silly not to expect that, to be honest with you.
I mean, it's like at the level that they play at in Brood War and the time commitment required to compete at that level, like, you know, I'm sure that they're putting in the most amount of time into StarCraft II that they can, but it's at the end of the day, right? They're having to divvy up their time between these two games, and it depends really on the player's focus as well. And I think a lot of them are still probably primarily concerned with Brood War, well, obviously. And then it just kind of leads to like a second-rate StarCraft II performance because, you know, they just can't... You can't divide your time between playing two games at that level competitively that are so different. I mean, they have similarities, but the strategies, the metagame, everything is so different. And it clearly showed that. And I think Hotbit hit the nail on the head when he tweeted about how poor their decision-making was, but he said it was like watching two gorillas trying to pillow fight whenever the Brood War players were playing. And I mean, I totally agree with that. It's like they have all the raw fundamentals there.
Right.
But it's just a totally different game. And I'm sure with time and with practice, you know, they'll catch up. But it's like, I don't know. I think it would be much more hype and much cooler if it was like, all right, you know, Jadong, Flash, Bisou are playing StarCraft II like full time now. And they're going to start competing. And they have a huge StarCraft II tournament. Or, like, I think that's the way to do it, to be honest.
Honestly, I think they are mostly pretty focused on StarCraft II. Like, I'm sure they play for a few days before they have a Brood War match. But from the interviews Flash given and just what would make sense, I think they're mostly focused on Star 2, and they just haven't had the time to get good at it yet. Like, it's going to take anyone a while.
Yeah, they've only had, like...
I actually was pleasantly surprised that I thought Effort played really, really well. He actually lost the game I'm talking about on Daybreak, or no, Cloud Kingdom, but he had like all the right makings of a really good Zerg. He literally just engaged at the wrong time, and that's purely an experience thing. Like, I feel like once he gets the experience with the mechanics and the stuff that he was showing, it'll be awesome. In fact, he was kind of showing some really cool stuff. Like, he was dropping a shit ton of changelings, which sounds really like subtle and insignificant, but actually the way he was doing it, he had ridiculous map vision, just insane intel, because Protoss will not keep up with that eventually. Like, he'll kill 20 of them, but he had like 40 fucking changelings all the time.
Really?
Another thing I saw Effort doing that was really fucking cool, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was gonna pick Effort as like StarCraft II player that I thought was playing the best.
Was one of the questions, by the way, so we'll just revert to that. The best Brood War to StarCraft II player, I think we all agree, was probably Effort.
I'll definitely pick Effort.
I haven't seen him play yet, but he was like ridiculously fucking talented in StarCraft I. Mm-hmm. Like, if he hadn't retired after winning his OSL, I think he would have been, you know, talked about along with Flesh and Jadong and Bisou. So it would not be surprising at all. I've also heard that he's already GM on Korea in StarCraft II. Protoss player from KT, Lizzie or whatever.
He also did something really, really cool that I haven't seen a lot of Zergs doing at all. And it's something really simple, and I just saw him do it, and I was like, oh, man. As soon as he morphed his Overseer, and when his Spire finished, he just built, like, two Mutalisks and had them running around with an Overseer, just picking off Observers against Protoss. And it's, like, that's so smart. but yeah, you don't see a lot of people controlling observers against Protoss like that, and it's a really small investment, and it's a great way to mitigate their map control. And I don't know, I was just really impressed. I think, you know, he's got a lot of potential. He's a smart guy.
That was the cool stuff I liked seeing. Like, if you went into it expecting, like, your head to be blown off, and you're just like, wow, this will be the best dessert, you know, the best play ever, you're in the wrong place. Right now, I could see the potential, but not now.
Okay, so was there anyone else, just for, you know, for full disclosure, was there anyone else that you guys, you know, thought played?
Yes.
Well,
okay.
Aside from effort?
Who was the fucking Protoss? I want to say it was the ace Protoss player that came out
Motive?
With carriers and void rays against Roro.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Who was that? It was someone in the chat. Someone say it. Not Lizzie. Stardust, who's M81, or M18M, actually. That's interesting. He changed his name to Stardust. That's Well, his name was random, and now it's just stupid. But that was actually frickin' awesome. Like, it really was frickin' awesome. We've seen Protoss try air before, but actually mixing it with Void Rays and then also using Templar on the low ground. And he built a shit ton of cannons. This is on Ohana. It looked like the most god-awfully stressful way to play for a Zerg to try to counter it, but he did it beautifully, and that's the kind of cool stuff I'm excited about. Like, Brood War players coming in with a different mindset, they're not current on all the metagame, they don't know the history, they don't know what's been tried and didn't work, they don't know the maps, you know, that kind of stuff. They're just going into it interpreting, and I think cool stuff like that could potentially come out over and over again, and I'm really excited for that.
I was just trying to find the
Thanks,
matchup
guys.
Too. But well, no, yeah. I was trying to find the matchup. Jeff, I wanted to say that because a lot of people in the chat are asking that all these games are available on youtube.com/esportsTV. I mean, you can watch pretty much all the games. Now, you're going to watch them in stunning 480p quality.
Prepare your body.
This is amazing. I'm sure you can tell. All right, so now it comes to the moment where we talk about the worst Brood War to StarCraft II performance that we saw on opening night.
Mm.
I only watched the first three or four games that night because in the second KT set, when Flash didn't come out, I figured he wasn't going to come out, so I just went to sleep. Mm-hmm. So I didn't see the rest of those games.
I'm not going to say worst, but most disappointing for me was definitely Jadong.
Jadong was great.
Yeah, I mean, I was super excited to see him play. He's probably he is my favorite Brood War player of all time. And just, like, not seeing him be able to have that, you know, like, killer instinct where he's just making amazing decisions and going after it and just taking people out, it's kind of like, I don't know. He was floundering a little bit in StarCraft II, and it's totally understandable, but it just sucks to see that from such a legendary player like Jadong.
For me, it wasn't the worst, but I think perhaps the most hilarious, and then worst in relation to the hype, mm-hmm. for me was Flash. Like, he's probably going to go on to become the god of StarCraft that he was in Brood War, but you as think? Of right now, with, like, all the memes of, like, Flash putting a picture of Idra up and, you know, like, Flash is amused by your attempts at, like, playing the game. Like, all this shit.
It all got crushed, didn't it?
He gets his ass handed to him.
Did you guys see the Reddit that was based off the Matrix? Where it shows him and he's like, what does it mean?
You never make the first jump.
Yeah, you never make the first jump.
I mean, he's going to go on to become amazing, but I loved feeling like I could reach out. I could open my palms and feel the collective galactic, like, suck it. Suck it, everyone. Suck it long and suck it hard. Like, so many people were just, like, the threads on Team Liquid are filled with Brood War players like, here it is. Prepare yourself. You're about to get fucking impressed. You know, you don't know what shit's coming. And he just plays three command center, really basic. And then up to two, Effort's the guy that maxes at 13 minutes off Mutaling Baneling and just...
Wow, just shat all over his front door. He ran to his front door, rang the doorbell, lit that shit on fire, and then actually when he came out and stepped on it, he laughed at him. It was really just kind of like, oh, this is not going
to
be good.
To be fair, Flash definitely had one of those Terran oh shit moments where you're like pushing out of your natural and all your tanks are unsieged and you just see a fucking horde of Zerg come from every angle and you just like try and micro and run back and fall back.
You spread it all out. Get behind the wall! Split! Get behind the wall!
Yeah, it just doesn't work. Never works. But Effort had real good timing on that. Yeah, it was brutal.
He did. I don't know if there. Let me see. I think I had a couple more questions from the folks out there. This is a great one from Hack One. Did the lack of WoW of the Star Trek Craft 2 games deflate the hype of Anaheim, or can a month make a difference? I thought that was a good one.
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, because I think it does. Like we've seen,
and no one will ever call in and ask that shit. But apparently, they're okay. Sorry.
Like, everyone's going to be excited to go get a Flash autograph, a Jadong autograph. Like, those are going to be ridiculously awesome for people. But in terms of, like, the mystique of seeing them play, I would be shocked if people were like, I can't wait to see that in person, though. Like, it's just lesser StarCraft 2.
Anaheim's still going to be super hyped. I mean, there's so much going on there. There's the American Championship for the World Cup thing. Anaheim itself, MLG Anaheim, is just going to be huge. And you're going to have Heart of the Storm beta, and like Jeff said, Flash and Jadong, they're still legends. You still want to see them, even if they're not going to be super good at StarCraft.
Shit, I want their autograph,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah,
I
absolutely.
Want Jadong and Flash's autograph.
Yeah, they are just, they're amazing. But yeah, obviously, the StarCraft 1 players playing StarCraft 2 aspect of things is now a lot less exciting than it was when they were Enigmas. Or if they have been really, really good.
The veil has been lifted. We see the wizard behind the curtain suddenly, and it's like, oh.
And he's not super impressive.
He's not. He's kind of a smaller dude. But, you know, he has some potential. Well, okay, so then what about the second half of this question? Can a month make a difference?
Not that big of one, but it can, but just not that much. Like, they're not going to be top GSL level by then because they have another month of practice.
Right.
I think it's a longer haul than that. But just like if you look at like all the players' attributes, and maybe, you know, different individuals have like a cap set here in macro and a cap set here in micro, but it's only filled this high. Like their potential to fill all those different attributes, I think their levels are just way, way above your average player, and it's just going to take time for them to develop all those different skills. And especially experience, that's probably the biggest one, just experience-based knowledge in the game, different situations and how to handle them.
Yeah, situational advantage and being able to, you know, pull from a huge, huge pool of games that you've played.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the most valuable, you know, skills that you can have as a player.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's no doubt about it. As the live broadcasts do continue on youtube.com/esportsTV, the other big question we got, guys, was, you know, is there going to be an English stream for it officially? And we know that they're working on it. We know a few details that there is going to indeed be one, but for now, you'll have to just continue to.
Do we know who the casters are yet? Is it going to be Moltrap?
It sounds like it might be Moltrap. I don't know if there'll be someone else. I don't know if Torch is going to be doing League of Legends and StarCraft 2. I don't know.
That's questionable.
That's not true.
I already ranted and raved about it.
So,
we don't know yet. I have nothing against Moltrap as a person. Like, listen, my whole the summary of my whole thing was, it's Kespa, it's OGN, it should be the biggest league on the planet. You need some of, if not the biggest names in casting. You're not going to get Tastosis, I get that. You're not going to get Day9, I get that. This isn't a weird sideways, like, I'm really upset they didn't get me or something. Nope. I'm just saying, Moltrap, unfortunately, is not one of the best commentators we have.
I'll second that notion.
The no fluff is that, like, if you look at one of the reasons for success in the GSL, there's no doubt that Artosis and Tasteless brought their legacy and their experience to that. And that undoubtedly helped GOMTV really establish GSL, establish their brand in an English audience, and that is something that I think they have to consider. You know, they are going to get people to come watch. We watched in Korean all night long. You know, it didn't really matter. It was just fun to hang out with friends. I might just continue to do that,
That was the opening night and all the excitement that goes along with that.
Absolutely.
They really do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Be a mistake.
I mean, I just think you need a little bit more. I think that you need some name power, some really good name power. I don't know who that is. But
if
I hope
you look
they
at the big foreign
some.
Events, the weekend stuff, if they don't have Tastosis, that's a pretty big hit to them. Like, you're expected to have them if you're going to be a top-level event, just because they add so much excitement to it and people love them so much. Like, it makes a huge difference.
Pain user, maybe it's time to move to Korea, man.
So drop
someone,
him a line.
Someone's got to go over there and take the reins, bro.
He'd be twice as tall as anyone else in the country.
I don't know how they'd receive me over there. Do they even build subways and transportation for people like me?
You just have to hunch over a lot. It's okay.
Yeah. I can just imagine everybody giving me that, like that look that I receive sometimes in foreign places. Just like the please don't eat me. Just don't fuck with me.
That look.
Just like they'll look at me real quick with like shock and awe and then just look away or look down. It's kind of weird.
So that's Pro League. We'll try to open up the phone lines in a bit and see if anyone has any questions regarding that. Let's talk a little bit about we might as well just stay in Korea for the offshoot lands or the off-hour lands that we watched. Of course, the GSL finals. I think it was I think it kind of spoke for itself, man. We finally got another great GSL.
Another?
The last one was not that.
It's the best, in my opinion.
It's the best.
Well, you guys can talk about other good ones if you want. This one was head and shoulders, in my opinion, above better than any of them. Like, there have been other good GSL finals, but none even close to how good this one was.
Oh, it was absolutely amazing. I was on the edge of my seat the whole time. And, dude, I mean, going into the last game, I was like, you know, there's absolutely no way MVP's going to cheese again. But he just might because he's MVP and because he might just be able to get away with it. And then he fails the all-in and then, like, somehow salvages it together and takes the win, traps him in mid, picks off the Stalker and the Zealot. Oh, man.
Won him the entire championship.
Absolutely.
If he just straight-on attacks into the Stalker, Zealot, and whatever else was coming out,
yeah.
Maybe he wins, but maybe he doesn't.
Doubtful.
And with that flank.
Oh, and the probe?
Like three times. Oh, my God.
The probe sniping the mules? Anybody else catch that? He like, sent a probe all the way around the back of the map, and it had a probe just, like, harassing the mules the whole time so that they couldn't mine efficiently. I thought that was really cool from Squirtle, because he was, like, boxed in, and he had no real way to disrupt the mining. He didn't have an offensive pylon or anything, but just sent a single probe all the way around to harass the mules while they were mining. That was super cool from Squirtle.
It was great. Just...
I actually haven't even seen the finals, and I know they're more epic than anything else that's happened in GSL. Just from all
absolutely.
Yeah.
But people are talking excited about it. And, like, everyone knows how I generally feel about cheese, but for MVP to do that in the seventh set after a bunch of super epic games, that, like Jeff said, that takes balls of steel. Or a psychopath.
I'll say this.
Doing that.
In my StarCraft II history, which obviously I've been here since the very beginning, 2 years ago, two most exciting StarCraft II moments I've ever experienced was at IPL when Kiwi Khaki double Vortex Stefano's army in the middle of Taldrum Altar and won a game that I think at that time, like, the Vortex wasn't that used. It was just the most ridiculously exciting thing to ever attend in person, and it was the most ridiculous comeback. The second was the Vortex against the Battlecruisers in that final battle.
Beautiful.
It was. You know what made it so exciting, too, which I think is a little bit funny? Is that Squirtle shat his brains out of the side of his head and did the dumbest thing you could possibly do, which is mass recall onto an island.
Oh, I know. I was like, no, what are you doing?
He, like, loses the mothership, or he didn't lose it. I think he lost it.
I think he lost it, yeah.
But he's got, like, half his army ditched on a frickin' island that he's then having to manually press back and forth.
Press him back and forth.
So bad. But outside of that, we were talking about this at the house. We were all watching on the big screen. We're like, I think he's going to Vortex the Battlecruisers. And
pretty amazing.
You can't walk forward and Vortex. He came in through an angle. He's feedbacking. He had Void Rays coming over here. It was crazy shit. That was so awesome.
It was very, very well done. That was the only way for him to even remotely come back in that game, too. And he caught, like, the epicenter of all the BCs. The look on MVP's face after that game was just absolutely priceless.
How did I lose this fucking
game? I know, just like, what? Just completely dumbfounded. I thought he had it in the bag, too, those 3-3 BCs, especially after the first recall in the main where he just wiped the floor with everything Squirtle had, but yeah. Then sort of like decided not to push after that. Those were some crazy games.
It's pretty awesome.
It's a fun game, man.
It's pretty good. Yeah, and you know what? Let's hope that we get many more. You know, this is great stuff. I don't know if there's much else to say other than, you know, well deserved. It's pretty awesome.
I got
awesome.
Something to say, Wheat.
Yeah, do it.
I got a joke, okay?
Okay.
So, three Protoss and a Terran walk in a bar.
Oh, God.
Right?
Yeah.
Only the fucking Terran leaves! That was the month we were supposed to have our imbalance. That was the month we were supposed to be able to kind of sit back and coyly be like, yeah, maybe Protoss is imbalanced. But MVP shat on all of us. Shat on all of us in our hopes and dreams. So we come away from that with a second place trophy from Squirtle. And you know what makes it worse? He was down 0-3 and he has like the comeback of a lifetime. And he's like this little adorable guy where you're just right. Go Squirtle! Where MVP... The son of a bitch has already won like 4 or 5 titles, so he doesn't need another one. He has no shelf space for it. His bank account's like actually capped out. They're like, listen, I don't know what kind of drug you're selling, but you got to go somewhere else. And Squirtle, who's been on fire, he hasn't lost a match in like 20 best of threes or some shit, goes up against MVP at a time when Protoss is supposed to be in balance, and he gets his heart squirtled.
Crushed.
Yeah. I think one, like, really, well, obviously, one of the most powerful tools MVP has is the ability to just throw those cheeses in at any random point. And I think another thing is that, like, he's practiced each of those cheeses so many times that it throws the game into this, like, hectic sort of coin toss situation. And maybe at best, if you're cheesing like that, you have, like, 45% chance to win or something like that. But when you've practiced all those cheeses against like top players in the world hundreds and hundreds of times, I think it actually skews the odds in his favor when he rolls the dice like that. You know, he might have like a 60% chance when he does an all-in like that now because he's so practiced and experienced with it. And I think that just his ability to do that at any point in a series forces people to play in a completely different way.
Yeah,
like, it just totally fucks with them.
It's the diversity of his play that makes it so dangerous because you know he could be doing anything. He could go CC first or he could go 3 racks blindly. And when you have to account for that, and he does it so random, that's one thing that him and Nessie really have in common, just choosing build orders really, really intelligently and yet still random enough that you can't counter-guess them. And that makes him so incredibly scary to play against because you never know what could happen, but it's generally really thought out anyway. So it's just like you're always second-guessing yourself and you're always trying to account for everything, and that always leaves you behind for something. And it's usually what they pick because they're just so good at it.
Yeah.
Great finals. Loved it.
Great finals.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Great finals.
Squirtle ultimately was unable to evolve.
Let's take a break. I know we started a little late, but it's top of the hour. We'll take a break. Come back. We'll talk about MLG. Spring Arena 2.
You're so fucking biased.
I'm biased.
You always talking about MLG.
We cast at MLG, so therefore we're going to have to talk about it.
Like, MVP number 2 over here.
We don't have to talk about it. You know?
What about Green Forest Land, Wheat?
We're going to.
Okay.
We'll talk about that too. If you want to.
I'm just. No.
That was actually a week ago, though, wasn't it?
I don't know.
It wasn't this
that
weekend.
Great of a tournament, so.
It wasn't this weekend. Yeah, because actually. The winner of MLG Spring Arena said that tournament was the easiest tournament he's ever played in his life. And I don't think he lost a map.
Who took it?
Violet.
And then
that's not the kind of advertising
MLG.
Green Forest like then puts up on their wall. Like a faded picture of Violet. And then like in quotations it's like, this was the easiest tournament I've ever played in my life. And it's like, Violet. Wow. Come to Green
Forest. Cover in your share, too.
It's absolutely handed to you.
We'll take a break when we come back. Promotional posters are on the press, man. It's happening right now, Jeff.
I thought that I tuned into Green Forest for like 2 seconds, and I saw Thundertoss and Gwyn up there casting, and they had this huge square backdrop behind them, and like this huge gust of wind comes in.
Did it blow over?
Just knocks the whole backdrop. Oh my! Like, 10 feet behind
every
them.
Time I was so watching. Fine. I was just waiting for that to happen, actually.
Oh,
I was like,
the funniest thing.
It's going to happen. Man. It's going to happen.
And their playoff was, like, priceless. Like, they were both, like, concerned for their lives for a second. Just like, what the hell just happened? They're just like, oh, don't mind that. It's like, we're in a parking lot.
By the way, for those that now, Violet did not say that MLG Spring Arena was the easiest tournament he's ever played. He said that Green Forest Land was the
Green Forest.
Forest. Forest Land. Let's take a break. We come back. Talk about some more stuff. Thanks for joining us here on Inside the Game. Don't go away, folks. We'll be right back soon. We're back with our second half of Inside the Game. Welcome back to our host, Check 6 Pain User, EG Indra and EG In Control. Talked about GSL, talked about the Pro Leagues. Before we open up the phone lines, we'll talk a little bit about the Spring Arena, which, you know, I really want to go with this first question that came in about the Spring Arena. We talked about the changes, the recent balance changes. That happened, of course, with the Zerg and the Observer build time. And someone asked, they asked to remain anonymous. I'm not sure why.
you give me that fucking name.
Yeah,
I know. It's like, you're going to call out his alias anyway, you know? It's like...
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway.
You're going to call out his full name on stream.
It's funny because I think it's the way that they kind of posed the question. It was like, anonymous, please give a serious answer on whether or not you feel like the patch made a difference in the outcome. And I think what he kind of means is three Zergs in the end, undoubtedly he's just saying, No bullshit, guys. It's Zergo P now. There's three people, top MLG. We changed a couple things.
Listen, we need to preach this a little bit more, and people need to hear this. Like, in this tournament, we had one Protoss, two Terrans, three Zergs. Okay. There was a patch that happened like a month ago. Okay. The next tournament could have those results completely flipped around. It's like players adjusting to metagame. It's map pools. It's days of the week. Violet had a fever and was wearing a mask, and yet he was still able to beat it. But that same Violet with the same virus at a different tournament, maybe he loses to Joe Blow 1652 because he can't actually control his Zerglings. You know, like, I get so tired of, like, immediately after tournament, we look to discredit people. Violet has a black belt in, like, Taekwondo. He saved his dad from a burning house. He's been homeless. CSN, like, adopted this guy and raised him up, and he won a major tournament over some of the biggest, if not all the biggest names in StarCraft II. Can we not talk about imbalance? Just talk about fucking Stefano and how awesome he is and how sexy he looks. And
Violet, you mean?
Kind he is. I said Violet.
Oh.
No, you said Stefano.
You said Stefano.
Well, you know what?
Wow, Jeff, you got Stefano on the brain.
But, I mean, if you look at the top three, it's not like some random Zerg players who got by making 20 queens and that being impossible to stop. Like, it was Violet, Stefano, and Symbol. Symbol was top two at, the Iron Squid thing with all the top pros, and he just ran through everyone, looked really good doing it.
Yeah,
no Stefano. Violet has had ridiculous, like, since the IM Grand Finals, where he still made it through the playoffs, and then lost to MC in pretty disappointing fashion. Since then, he's looked ridiculous. Like, you talk to Protosses, they'll say his ZVP decision-making is among the best. His ZVZ is quirky as shit, but really smart, which makes him very dangerous.
Yep. You're talking about Violet, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then his ZVT is what he feels like is his weakest, and he still went and beat Polt. Just, like, he's really uncomfortable to play with, and he's gotten to the point where his mechanics and decision-making back that up well enough. He's a really scary player to play against. So you have three really good Zergs who had a good run, and that was that.
Greg, go ahead.
If we do want to talk about balance, I think ZVT might be going a little bit towards Zerg right now. Those queens help a lot in the early game. Overlord Scouting helps a lot. But ZVP doesn't feel too changed by it. It's just like, on this weekend, three Zerg players did really well.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's actually too early to even say the thing. It feels like it's going a little bit more towards Zergs. This happens after patch.
Every patch.
Every patch gets a minor boost. The people go, I'll start checking that out a little bit more. And then they realize, oh, okay, this is pretty cool. They start winning a little bit more. The other races that didn't get that boost or were on the other end of that boost, they have a faltering moment because they're trying to recoup, and then it evens out later, okay? The few patches where it's, like, jumped up 75% or whatever, there's, like, been two of those, by the way. They've only, like, at the end of the day, there's only been a couple patches where they were ridiculous. Like, I thought the Ghost one was going to be stupid, and for a while, Terrans did fall off, but they're right back. They're winning a lot now.
Yeah.
Like, Terrans actually do okay, and you know what? It's because they discovered they don't have these massive advantages with, like, their Hellions, and they can't sit back and make four orbital command centers and then make an army. Now they're doing some cheeses. Now they're doing Banshee play. They've discovered the Raven has a point. Like, they finally fucking discovered the Raven, and they're like, you know, that works pretty good in conjunction with Banshees, which, by the way, Pain user, I heard the Banshee's a fucking good unit, and guess what? Terrans are starting to use it in conjunction with Ravens.
Yep. I agree with you guys. I mean, I never once saw the commentary or the analysis of the game go, well, I mean, obviously that was a win because the Overlord's fucking faster. You know, I do feel like it changes.
Well, I mean,
you know, it changes the game a lot with the early queens. And
I want to see that screenshot though. I do want to see the diamond mid noob is like, fucking Overlords are hauling ass around the map now. You realize
this is bullshit.
A month ago, you never would have seen those three Stargates, right?
It's exactly. Like... but the queen thing I think is kind of interesting because. You know, it doesn't I still have seen Terrans open with, like, Reaper, even though the queen change has been made. It's not as effective for the scouting. You know, like, I don't think the Hellion opening is dead now by any means. I just think that it's not going to be an early way for the Terran to just, you know, he got through your defense. He snuck a few Hellions in and you're done with. Did you, I mean, what do you think, little Greg and Pain User, as far as that's concerned? I mean, this weekend, Greg, did you, I saw a lot of people going with extra queens, definitely, well, Zerg players going with extra queens throughout the tournament, for sure.
ZVTs and GSL so far in particular, it was Yu-Gi-Oh! Versus MKP, I think, in one of the Code A matches. I really liked what he did. He just kind of played Ling and Fester, but he added in six or seven queens for added DPS shooting down the medivacs and then transfuse once you get into Hive Tech. And because you get those really early on, that gives you great defense versus a lot of different all-ins. You get transfused on the spines. You have, again, the added DPS and just really good tanking ability. So, yeah, I think Mass Queen openings at least deserve to be played with. They might have counters. Terrans obviously aren't used to them at all yet, so they aren't really taking advantage of them if there is a way to do so. But it definitely seems very good. Honestly, I'm much more interested or much happier about the Overlord speed change. Just I've been asking for better scouting forever, and I think it was badly needed. And it actually helps quite a bit in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, it really does. Like, I don't personally use a lot of the builds where it's dependent on your opponent scouting you or not, you know, like hiding dual starport or like hiding five Raxes and all-inning off that. But in a lot of the games that I've seen, the Overlords get in there, they divulge pretty much everything the Terran is doing. Off one run, you can just sack them and pretty much get a good idea of exactly what they're doing. And I think Zergs needed something like that, because I just don't think builds like that add a lot to the game, where it's like, oh, shit, you know, I had, like, a Marine patrolling here, and it prevented the Overlord from getting in, and now my two starports go unnoticed, and then you roll in with, like, four Banshees and kill them. I don't think that adds a lot to the game, and I think it's certainly taken a lot of the variance out of the matchup, so Zergs have a better understanding of what's going on. And then as far as the Queens are concerned, it's not the biggest...
Last pick, I think, didn't we?
Yeah, yeah. It's not the biggest deal in the world. Yeah, they just make Hellions easier to defend and Reapers as well, but I don't think Reapers were ever really, like, an issue for Zerg at all. They just do more sustained DPS against Hellions, and it's helpful to the Zerg. So
don't be so quick about that. There was a time...
I heard you say ever.
Oh, I ever.
Remember. Me not. Hey, fucking
back in the day.
We both heard him say ever, and we were like, attack! Attack!
Like, are you sure about that?
What time?
There was a time.
Tomorrow!
This was amazing, for
Greg
sure.
Had he would have reacted to it, but you could see the emotion still just kind of sitting there on.
He was like, hoping, he was just like, please, Jeff and Wheat, just take this one.
Do it for me.
Do it.
I can't take it.
Just take it away.
Greg was on the most other side of that stick.
Let's see. I really, you know... We talked a lot about, and this is just, thank God, right, the evolution of StarCraft, right? PvP, it's like, oh, we're moaning, and lately we've seen some great PvP games. TVT, even that has evolved a shitload from the very early, nothing but tank Viking sort of vision wars with the flowers that we used to see, and that's changed a lot. And I really feel like the finals matchup of MLG, I was expecting it to just be... not that great, and I think we got a great sample of everything ZVZ. We got a comeback, we had a quick early game, we had an epic game with Drops and Nidus and on Metropolis that just sort of split the map and really showed what sort of warfare tactics Zerg can actually deploy. And that was probably one of the most pleasantly surprising things all weekend.
Yeah, the Metropolis game, that was the one that really stood out in my mind. That one was just amazing. Like, Violet had him so beat early on. He was up like 50 supply with a running third base versus a mediocre third base and being aggressive. And then Symbol pulls out this amazing Nidus at a time where you don't normally go Nidus in ZVZ. Like, it was an odd thing. Symbol has a very unique ZVZ style in general, actually. He does that, and all of a sudden it's all evened up, and then they go into a long back-and-forth game from the even point. Like, especially from Violet's point of view psychologically, you have that kind of advantage, and then you throw it away or have it taken away by your opponent. It sent really depressing and hard, and he stood his ground and he fought back, and then he ended up winning the game despite that. Like, he realized he wasn't out of the game yet, even though he had lost his advantage. So that was really, really well done by both of them, and really cool game.
One of the other really great things I liked over the weekend, and we talked a little bit about the Iron Squid, but during the Iron Squid, Symbol had attempted this. This, you know, very specific roach heavy into ventral sacs and overlord speed into a heavy drop. He did this versus MC, and when he attempted to do it in the Iron Squid Cup, it really failed. It was a like fall flat on your face failure. And it was actually brought up by Total Biscuit and Apollo right before the same game on Metropolis again. Actually, it was not Metropolis. It was Daybreak, I believe. And he pulled it off with just a really, really phenomenal, phenomenal sort of swagger to it all, and looked really nice. I mean, it was really nice to see someone who kind of failed with something like that and then brought back the exact same thing, was able to defeat the same guy that just crushed him on it earlier on. But there were some great games throughout the weekend. I don't know if you guys saw any particular that you enjoyed or like, but those were the two, that one Metropolis game, Idra, that you just commented on, and then a couple of Symbols games versus MC were really top-notch.
Yep.
For me, I get most excited, again, when there's like a foreigner that I care about playing against another top player, usually Korean or another foreigner. Like, I thought the Thorzane Sock series was actually really, really cool. Some great games were had in there. I liked Stefano versus MC. I thought his hold against MC's timings were pretty freaking amazing. And almost whenever Stefano plays, I really feel like all the Zerg should be watching and seeing, like, yeah, okay, there is some weird elements to Stefano's play that people can't emulate. But then, like, one thing I really like is basically the timing of his infestors, the way he uses them and the way he preserves them, is something that more Zerg should shoot for, because they actually have the ability to stop a lot of those timings. Like, Immortals, no problem, I'll get all the sentries. Colossus, no problem, I'll get all the sentries. And then, like, Mass Stalkers, if they can't blink, they're made of glass. So I thought Stefano did a pretty good job of showing that off.
Yeah, I actually have to go watch the VODs or replays from those matches, because on Daybreak, I actually left. As that Stalker Immortal Sentry timing was going in, I was sure the game was over. I went off to get food or something. And I come back and find out he won, so...
Kind of handily, too. Like, he actually had 4.5 bases running against that 2-base timing, which looked like that was the death of him. But he just did such a good job of fungling when he could, pulling back, and then the Infested Terrans as a concave at the top of the ramp was the final note. Like, MC, I think, agreed with you. He was like, what the fuck is this guy still doing in this game? I'll just go finish it. And ended up dying.
Yeah, I think one interesting thing to take away from this, MC, whose PVC was invincible, who said publicly, I will not lose to a Zerg, a month or two ago, mm-hmm. went 0-2, I think, versus two Zergs. I think he went 0-2 versus Stefano, then 0-2 versus Symbol. I feel like his style is kind of getting a bit out of date. He does not like making motherships. He likes to kill you off two or three bases with mass timings, and people are finally starting to catch on in, like, our Zerg's macro and timings and whatnot are getting good enough to deal with that.
A lot of his games are like, he'll go Colossus, but his Colossus are like a cover for the fact that he's actually still just making Stalkers, like, Stalkers. So many of his games end with a Zerg coming in with like 10 Corruptors and sniping the two Colossus, but then dying to 150 supply Blink Stalkers. You know? Like, he's like, oh, gotcha, you thought I was going to stop making Stalkers. No. And remaking Sentries, that's a fool's game. I just made more Stalkers.
It's just so true, though.
Yep.
That's just how it goes, man.
Yeah.
MC's Twitter, he did say, when he is the last Protoss left, he said, I will fucking kill all Zergs. And then, like, a couple hours later, it said, I lost.
I love him. He's such an entertainer, man. He's like the
best. I do, too. He is.
Because when that guy wins or loses, his fan base does not dip. Well, okay, when he wins, it grows. But, I mean, the point I'm trying to make is, like, no matter what, he brings a show, and people want to watch him play because he's got so much personality. And when he loses, you don't see threads... I mean, there was that time when he took a dip because he was doing all that travel, but after that,
People
were just like, man, MC's fucking awesome. Like, he actually can get bonked in the head, and people are just like, you'll get him next time with your 2-base timings, no worries.
And that's super rare from a Korean. Like, you don't see that. Yeah. You'll see Koreans who are likable. They're obviously passionate, like Boxer, Nada, and whatnot, but they're not entertainers. They're not super, well, Boxer, I probably shouldn't say that about, but they're not really the big personalities. And so to see that from MC is just, it's really, really cool because it's so
unusual. Definitely out of the norm for Korean players. A lot of times they're just like super stoic, don't show a lot of emotion, strictly business. I kill everyone at StarCraft.
Yeah.
So, of course, this all sets up the MLG championship, which takes place in, like, I keep saying a month, but it's literally like
two and a half weeks, I think.
Yeah. That's pretty insane. That's pretty crazy.
There's actually an MLG event every month now. It's kind of hard to deal with.
And let's see. I've got the championship up here. We do now have top. Here we go. And we've got it right here. Let's see. That's for the seeded. Seeded into pool play. MC, Inori, Alicia, Grubby, Zake, Polt, Dream, Ryung, Stefano, Violet, Cymbal, and Leenok. Seeded in the open winner bracket. Bling, Select, Idra, Oz, MMA, Sleep, Thorzane, Teflon.
The rest of them.
The rest of them. Thank you. Are you sure you don't want me to go off on the rest of them?
I have 16 names here. I can read them if you'd like.
I can. I'm just trying to fill 20 seconds. No.
Got them.
So, I mean, the open bracket's still going to remain a beast. It does look like we've got, you know, a nice race distribution across the seeded into pool play, the open winner bracket round five entries, and then the pool play from the first spring arena as well, which is kind of nice. But I think we have more, like one more Terran than everyone else. But I'm really excited for this event. I can't wait. I thought Spring Arena was quite good. The times were great for it. Not really sure how the spectator experience was. I don't know if you guys have any comments on that, Pain User or In Control.
You know,
there's a few things that MLG added to their production.
I was totally fine with the production. I thought it was great. I'm finding these arenas an extremely worthwhile $20 endeavor, which I always laugh because there's always the comments like, $20? Fuck that. I'm going to go outside and do other stuff and come home and watch this other tournament that doesn't cost money. So fuck you. And it's just like, all right, man, you go do that. So for me, it was like an awesome experience, and I think we can expect that every time. I thought an interesting thing, and I'm going to be that guy that does this, MLG is becoming a little bit more identifiable for me with Tastosis, and I really felt the lack of their presence. Obviously, they had to catch the GSL final, so I'm not like, let's find a way, you know, reschedule it, fly them over on a jet plane from outer space. I'm not going to do that. But I thought seeing Total Biscuit and like Apollo kind of mixed in there was a little bit. It just felt strange for me.
That's an interesting perspective.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting. It was kind of interesting. They still tried to do like the analysis table, but minus the professionals this time. So like the last arena,
I think
Axlav
came in one time.
Okay, they had Axlav come in one time. For the most part, like I thought it was pretty funny. Like there was a couple scenarios where they shot over to Total Biscuit and Wolf, and I think it was Rob who's like, "And now to Wolf," and then he like realized Total Biscuit sitting there too, and he's like, "And Total Biscuit," but everyone like latched onto that, and it like they're kind of waiting for opportunities to argue about who's an expert and who's not.
Right.
So I felt like MLG kind of threw Total Biscuit under the bus a little bit, and some of you other guys too. Like, you're not known for your analysis. You're not a professional player. So to be put in an analysis situation, it's just kind of a mismatch.
This is easily solved, actually.
Right.
Yeah. Right?
So it's kind of
don't
a weird
call
role,
it like, the analyst desk. Right? Yeah. If there's an analyst there, that's awesome. You know, but, like, there's a lot of reasons why it's there. Part of it is so that two casters don't have to constantly, like, especially right after a game, gives it a chance to cool down. Sometimes you're so focused on something that's happened in the game, it's awesome when someone says, well, hey, guys, I don't know if you noticed this early on, but, you know, this happened. And it's like, oh, yeah, that was cool. You know, there was a few great moments where Apollo, who's got a full, you know, full of information, didn't talk about the game at all. He talked about a lot of historical data. You know, he talked about a lot of this person played in this tournament and the last times these guys met. So I almost feel like it's a little misnamed, right? That maybe it's not the analyst desk. It's just like
the breakdown.
Another commentary.
Right, exactly. You know what I'm saying?
And now over to the additional commentating table.
I don't know, right? Because the analyst desk just kind of like makes sense. Maybe you call it the sidelines, and just because that's a familiar sports term. But I think that calling it that has automatically set it up for exactly what you're talking about, Jeff, is that like, well, motherfucker, if Flash isn't sitting at that table, then damn it, I don't want to hear shit. You know, sets it up for that.
It's okay to have an analyst. That's just, you know, actually have it be an analyst.
Post-game table.
Yeah, for sure.
Post-game
table. What Jeff said.
No offense to Total Biscuit, but he's not an analyst, and that's the weird thing.
He would say the same thing, I think. He would tell you as well.
He has. But like you said, only like have Axelav there once at the analyst desk. I really liked what they did last time when they had Jeff and Axelav, QXD, maybe some others, and had them at the analyst desk every time to actually analyze the game. And as long as you get the right set of pro players to get experience and have them do that every time, I think that's a great thing.
Yeah.
It actually is an analyst desk.
Yeah.
Someone asks, I'm guessing this has to be Scoots, why do you have to call the fucking desk anything? Well, Scoots, yeah, let me tell you. Because what do you say? How, as a host, do you throw it over there? Do you just say, let's hear from, you know, you give it a label so that that way it's like it relates to the viewers. Like, oh, we're going to this location, that, you know. I mean, you could just say, yes, let's shoot it over to Total Biscuit and Apollo for there. But if you give it a label, then, you know, that's
what. You know what? Give your sponsor some love. Call it the Bic table. Doesn't actually have any purpose, but you can actually bill that to your sponsors and say
they do that with the NOS performance replay.
There you go.
But that's just like thrown in there every once in a while.
Just give the analysis some big pens, have them sit at the table, writing down notes on Apollo's notepad.
But I mean,
analyst for MLG, you have to be able to do those little pen tricks.
I mean, the Dr. Pepper breakdown desk. There we go. There you go. But I do, I mean, like, as a host, having that, being able to throw it to the analyst or whatever, it's, you know, it flows well. But I agree with you, Jeff and Indra.
So it's not like, you know, didn't detract from the experience for me, but I still think there's some growing that needs to be done there. JP was in our chat saying that he contacted a lot of pro players and they just couldn't travel on that weekend. You know, we're getting pretty busy here. Those are busy weekends. So obviously MLG tried. But you know what? I grab some of the players at that tournament, kind of like Home Story Cup style. And if they get eliminated, ask them, hey, you mind sitting at the table doing some extra coverage? And I bet you'll find a couple players each time that are willing to do that. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
I think it's also missing like a dot matrix printer in the background.
Yeah.
It's like constantly printing stuff out so you can rip it off of the printer. It'd be like, holy shit, this just did. Goody beat MMA 2-0.
Pay some hot intern to come in with slips of paper and be like, yeah, exactly what you did. Like, gentlemen, this is hot off the presses. Grubby has taken down Oz 2-0. What do you think about that, Total Biscuit? An amazing result. An excellent result. Fantastic in the blue trunks. Wonderful in the red trunks. Sexy in the wind trunks. And then they just go back to DJ Wheat and Apollo, and they're like, yeah, man, fucking A. Good result. Fucking awesome. A. That's the shit I'm talking about.
That's pretty much what I say.
It's fucking awesome.
That's pretty much what I say.
And Apollo's like, but do you think that he won convincingly, Wheat? Was that how he did it? Yeah, fucking A, man. Probably won like that.
why am I the guy that says fucking A? Oh, God. Any final comments, you guys, on Spring Arena? And otherwise, we'll open up the phone lines for the remainder.
Looking forward to the next one. I think they're an awesome... I would go through MLG withdrawals if they didn't happen every weekend. And guess what? MLG didn't pay me to say that. I actually get $0 from them now that I don't win those tournaments anymore. So I'm actually completely okay telling you that I enjoy their fucking experience, and I hope they do more of these things. Boom.
That's true. MLGs are always awesome.
Awesome. We ready to open the phone lines?
Yeah, man.
Congratulations to Violet, by the way. He really did.
Yeah.
Really
he's been on great. Top form lately, and that's a big win for him. He's definitely coming up.
They need to pay. Okay, so like when I was on that reality show, they paid a live audience. They filled the stadium with people that they pulled off the street and handed the money. MLG needs to do that for the final moment of their arenas. Like, to see Violet just kind of go like, that's not doing it for me. I need a gush of just attractive New Yorkers to come in from off screen and just be like, Violet! Oh my god! He's just like, keep away, I'm sick, but he's like so thrilled about the victory. I need more than that than just like.
That is the one downside of the arenas, the lack of the live audience.
It is.
$10,000. Super neat. Super neat. Super excited about this. This is exciting to me. I'm.
You know, there's also, since we're talking about the finals and winning, I was a bit disappointed with Symbol's GG timing in the finals. because, you know, for a caster as well, it's the last game. Like, Violet's clearly going to win. It's his final push. Symbol knows it's over. It's building, you know, the epic battle is happening and the voice is getting higher and it's coming to that crescendo and he've reached the apex of it, and that's right when the point where he's supposed to say GG, and he still is like, oh, it looks like Violet's going to have to send in one final push just to make sure that Symbol knows that it's time to GG.
Wait, I got your back. Next MLG event, you know what you do? You fucking cut the you cut to the casters. It's over.
GG.
Yes. And like they still play for 3 or 4 more minutes, but that's fine. You go to the casters, oh, and now the casters are going. Yes.
Oh my god!
Violet.
It was really, it was really funny.
Such a good victory.
But anyway, it was still good matches. All right, there's a ton of people calling in, so let's take one of these calls. All right. Let's
put the gloves on.
Indeed, man. Where do we start here?
I want Greg to get glued at someone. Can you do that for me, Greg?
Do what?
I want Greg to go brutal honest with someone.
Like
that time a guy asked you for a show match and you just said no.
We're gonna get an actual call here. We're gonna get an actual call. We've got Orb on the line. Hello, Orb. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up? Wait. Why don't I?
Oh, my bad.
Oh, there we are.
I was just casting. What's going on? How you guys doing?
Doing good, man. How are you?
Yeah, how are you?
I am pretty good. Oh, I miss you guys, too.
What's on your mind, man?
Oh, I actually had a question for Idra. I hope you didn't already talk about this. I was like, you know, I was just casting, so I joined in late. But I saw in your interview with Hopid that you've recently been talking to a sports psychologist, which is something I'm really interested in, and I'm glad to see that teams are starting to do that. I think it's really important. And I was just wondering, I know you haven't like been doing it for a long time, but I was wondering if you'd be willing to kind of, I don't know, divulge any of the details about the kind of stuff you guys talk about. I know personally myself, I know if you've ever watched my stream, I'm definitely a person that's really interested in, you know, improving mentality and mindset while playing StarCraft.
Right on. Good question.
I've actually only done one session with him so far, and a lot of it was just like intro to esports, like what I actually have to deal with while playing. So I was kind of educating her so that she could then move on and help me.
It's a very basic stuff.
Yeah. Well, no, she actually works with the American Olympic team. Like, it's all done via Skype because she's off in Colorado at their training facilities right now. So, okay. No, she is a very legitimate psychologist. But, yeah, it was very initial, very basic stuff because I've been off at tournaments and off at show matches and everything else for the past 3 weekends. So we only got to do one session so far. So, honestly, not too much. We talked about, like, breathing techniques and just recognizing what kind of mental state you're in. And which way you need to go if you need to up or lower your energy level going into a match and stuff like that. Nothing too groundbreaking so far.
It's kind of like a side question because, you know, like with any sort of psychologist or therapist or counseling or anything, you know, the person in question who's receiving this kind of has to be open to it. So, I mean, I take it just by your in your interview and talking about it, that it is something you're very open to. Towards and that you know want to actively use to get better, right?
Oh, absolutely. I think anyone who has watched me play pretty much since the start of my professional Brood War career can attest that the mental aspect of my game is the weakest part of it. It's something I know I need to work on. And yeah, me and EG Management talked about it back in fall before I went to Korea, and it's something I've been interested in since then, and it's just now worked out. We found the right person.
That's a really good question. Greg, a lot of the stream chat's been kind of using quotations, so obviously the big question in everyone's mind is, have you had sex with a psychologist as well?
That I have not. That I believe happens around the third
over session. Skype? Yeah, of course. It's awesome.
Okay, I was just wondering, because there's a lot of weird language going on there, like you helped her and breathing techniques, and you informed her of these sports.
I can't see how that would be confusing, but no, we have not yet.
Well, Greg, they're on to you.
All right. Awesome.
Better watch back, or as it were, watch hers.
Thank you for your call, dude.
Yeah, thanks for answering, man.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. We'll have to get some updates on that. As you get a few
updates? Yeah.
Updates. We're gonna take a phone call. We've got area code 727 on the line. Hello. Welcome to Inside the Game. He hung up. He's like, fuck. All right.
All we can do is keep trying to make this show better, and someday that guy will actually take our call.
Maybe he will. We've got mute us in the background. We've got area code 626 on the line. Son of a bitch hung up. All right. We got area code 248 on the line. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up? Yep.
Hi.
Oh, God, you're done, dude. You're done, man. You don't...
Off me, man. Don't hang up on me.
Okay, you're going to give us something for real, then.
My question just went away.
Oh, yeah.
Bye, guys.
Oh, okay, famous titties.
Okay, okay. How hard is it, really? Are you fucking kidding me? Don't hang up on me. I've got something good. Oh, I forgot it.
I want to introduce you to my son. This is my son, Timmy.
Oh, man, dude.
Hi.
I got through. Hold on, man.
You'll rue the day you crossed me, Trebek.
Oh, man. No, don't
hang up. Oh, man. Okay. Here we go. We got Jason on the line. Jason G, what's up? Welcome to Inside the Game.
Hey, man. How's it going?
It's going good, man. What's your question?
Good, good. I was gonna just really quickly talk about how I love Moltrap, and he actually got me into Brood War before SE2, but then I was thinking about it, like, you guys used to talk about strategy on this show more than just the tournaments and stuff, so I was just wondering, in regards to the, like, Jadong versus whoever he was playing, like, what can he do against that kind of, like, early two base Robo Warp Prism Colossus kind of play where he's like force fielding around. I was just wondering if you guys wanted to maybe talk about like what kind of options Zerg has there.
Well, he went Immortal instead of Colossus, and there's a couple of options. Counterattacking is a lot of Zergs agree that that's the right thing to do versus the two Immortal one Warp Prism timing. He just didn't really execute the counterattack 100% correct. But yeah, in general, just that Immortal all-in is super, super powerful versus the Rocha openings. That's why he's been seeing... Well, that's one of the reasons I've been playing more with Ling Bane Lane lately. Yeah, because you get drop in time, and that just absolutely destroys your Immortal build.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but I think Rocha is still the more popular opening, and most Zergs agree you kind of have to counterattack first, unless you can catch them out in the open on creep with a big flank, and... It's a hard build to deal with.
And if I recall, their armies passed in that match, didn't they? Wasn't it one side? And that's kind of how it ended up in that that situation?
Exactly, yeah. He went up the right side, and then the guy was going down the left, and he brought the Warp Prism in. It just didn't seem like Jadong could do anything at the other guy's base because of Force Field.
Well, I think another thing that also really hamstringed Jadong in that situation is... When he saw the Warp Prism all in coming, and he went for the counterattack on Ohana, you know that the Protoss is going to get to your third and take it out no matter what. I mean, he sent the majority of his army to counterattack. He didn't pull his drones from the third, so he ended up losing, I don't know, 15, 16 drones at the third. Then when the Immortal all in came into the natural, he didn't pull his drones from the natural either, so he lost like 30 drones. I think he would have been able to salvage the drones from the third and the natural into the main, and then he put up all the spine crawlers and made a hold in his main. But losing 30 drones like that, and then coming out of that situation where, like, you're... And he never got a Nexus either. He didn't get the natural Nexus or the main Nexus. I think he needed to commit to one or the other, because when all things were said and done, the toss was on two base. Yeah, he lost a lot of probes, but he can double Chrono Boost the Nexus and recoup that very easily. And Jadong was just on one hatch with no production, no macro hatch. And he lost all the drones at his second and third. So I think, like, his handling of a hectic base race situation, like, he made a lot of questionable decisions. But, like, how many of those situations has he been in against a Protoss? You know, it's tough.
No, how many times has he been in that? All right.
They're like, ah!
Oh, okay, say one last thing?
One last thing, Jason G.
Thank you. Clan USSR? The channel on Battle.net, if you guys want to check out Soviet Gaming. We're like masters, but we accept everybody. It's cool.
Awesome.
Thank you.
I'll stop by and I'll say hi. Peace, man. Take
care. Man.
Bye. Stop by. Wow, someone uses Battle.net channels. You guys, this is amazing.
Oh my God.
Now everyone that's going to call is going to be like, yo, stop by my Battle.net channel.
Shout out to my homies in my Scott channel. You know who you be.
Don't you guys feel like in a way, sort of like, The BNet 2.0 system, like, really isolates your experience in StarCraft 2. I was thinking about this the other day.
Oh, it's my God.
You were just thinking about it, Pain User? I swear we're talking about this.
I mean, that's
this,
like, I think it's terrible. I've always thought it was terrible. But, like, there's a serious isolation aspect to it. You don't have, like, the cool channels for teams where people can hang out and, like, talk to one another, fun games.
Pain User, what we'll do is I'll schedule that for us to talk about on Inside the Game, and it just so it turns out we have room to talk about that 4 episodes ago when we did.
They're going to add the clan support, though.
Yeah, hopefully. I don't know. Just sucks. The friend system is so bad.
I know
bad.
You feel so lonely because you're like, man, I'm like running shit in D3, and like my friends just join my games and like.
Hey, bro, I'm one of the most farmed out level 60s in Inferno mode. Get out of here.
I knew it.
Right. Hey, there's a lot of SC2 pros that are actually playing too. Select just hit 60.
Oh, yeah, you want to talk about how much Select is playing? Enough that he stayed up till 5 a.m. and then came into his match 10 minutes beforehand and didn't perform too well? Yeah, look who won the tournament. The guy who was like, yo, bitches, put the D3 down. Put the Diablo down. And then he goes and he fucking wins. Violet tweeted, he's like, go eat. Go outside, and then he goes and wins. He's like, I'm worried about you. And then he won. Got another caller here. We got Jordan on the line. Hello, Jordan. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey, what's up, guys? Thanks for taking the call.
No problem, man. What's your question?
Well, it's not related to anything specifically that you've talked about on the show today, but it's more like, as a fan the past few weeks, I've been feeling as almost like myself as a fan and the fan base in general is almost in the way, is almost like pissing off like players and stuff more than we are lifting them up. I didn't know what you guys thought about that. Like,
what's pissing off players? What do you mean?
What's that?
What are you referring to that's pissing off players and getting in the way?
I mean, kind of just like how we act as a community as a whole. Like, does this?
Oh, the community. Yeah.
We're like shitting on players than we do building them up. Like, what's your guys' perspective on
this? It's kind of weird because, well, what do you guys?
It's gotten to the point where, go ahead, Greg.
It's gotten to the point where I just, like, I think, I know I do, and I think most people just ignore it, because generally the community is pretty toxic, and if you paid attention to them, it would be depressing, so it just, most of us kind of don't, as far as I know.
There's been a learning curve, like a lot of players, myself included, started out wanting to read everything the community said, because the attention was new, it was exciting to be a bigger figurehead. And then they're realizing with the larger fan base, with the larger community watching this game, there's a lot more shitheads. And of course, if I get 10 nice messages, but then I get like 2 really bad ones, the ones that usually stick out are the bad ones. That's the unfortunate way that people work. So a lot of players are regressing. They went out, they're like, I want to read everything. And then they're like, oh, shit. And they're like, they're coming backwards on that.
Yep.
So I say it's getting better. Maybe it is, maybe it's not. But at least I can speak on behalf of a lot of the players. Their ability to handle that and their ability to filter or just flat out they've learned not to read that stuff has been instilled better. And it's too bad because the community actually is filled with amazing people that say amazing things all the time. But like I said, when I get 10 tweets, I'm like, hey, I'm going to be practicing tonight. And I get 10 tweets and I'm like, great, I can't wait, I'll watch that. You're fucking fat and horrible and I wish you would die. And you're just like, oh, this guy's kind of angry. And you just block him. And then when you block him, you're done with it. And that's the nice thing.
Yeah.
In the past, I used to respond. Here's the funny fucking thing. Like, this is what I've learned. In the past,
time,
I'd be like, I'm not that fat, and I'm pretty good, actually, and I think you're dumb. And then, like, I would then later, like, they'd keep responding, and I'd respond to them. And then I'd realize, wait a second, I'm tweeting to 37,000 people my defensiveness and me getting all upset about something, which is really ugly and annoying for them. That guy's tweeting to 7 people, and he actually had to make a new account because everyone he's yelling at is just blocking him over and over again. So now I click on their name and I go, oh, okay, and then I block them. Now if, like, Sundance Giovanni tweets me and is like, you're a fucking, I don't like that you make fun of my chest hair and I think you're a douchebag. That one I have to respond to because he's, you know, he's making a legitimate statement that matters and other people are listening and this is like a momentous moment. But if like, DarkRider625 sends me a picture of a fat guy and goes, this is you! And then I'm like, okay, block, you know, have a good day.
Dude, you know what? Jeff, I'm done, man. This is the, like, you brought DarkRider625 into this shit, man, and I'm not okay with it, man. I'm not, no. You know what? Thank God we have an event, like, MLG Anaheim, and we have events like NASL and DreamHack where fan interaction, suddenly the internet goes away.
Yeah,
you live inside a vortex where that shit doesn't matter, because what matters is like what's happening. And, you know, like to see fans go absolutely apeshit when they run into Idra or Jeff and you know, the Korean the pro gamers, I'm sure it's going to be huge in Anaheim. You know, there, that's like the one relief from it all. And then it lasts a little bit longer until the next event, because then it's just internet bullshit. But I mean, I agree, man. You know, there's like the TL fan, the fan clubs, and every time there's a new champion, definitely the community gets behind them. But you know, I agree. Like, I would love it if sometimes someone would actually be like, God, this player is just really great, and I just want to say how much I appreciate how much this player streams and what they bring to, you know, it's, yeah, I don't know. I guess that's just not as awesome as being like, this guy's fat and he sucks.
Right.
I don't get it.
Right. Okay, well, that's all I had. Jordan, I was just curious on what you guys thought about, so thanks for taking the
call.
Thank
you for your call, man. Take
care.
Thanks, dude. Yep, bye-bye. All right, so far we're doing good.
Yep.
Of course, Wax Steven says every time I say that, that just means the next one's going to you in the ass, so we'll see.
We'll see.
We're gonna take this guy's call. We got Parrot on the line. Hello, Parrot. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Oh, sorry, I gotta mute my stream.
Thank you.
So my question was about, you know, the whole kind of Stefano drama thing that went on.
You mean about the joining EG rumors and
right
stuff?
Shit, I can hear my... So there's this whole thing, he's going to move in and practice in the team house and everything, and... fuck.
Are you trying to troll us, man?
He said fuck, and then he disconnected. Well, let's just pretend like he had a Skype problem, but he had an intelligent question. EG guys, would you like to comment?
Just like, what was that?
It must be. I don't know. I don't know if Parrot was like, man, I'm gonna troll the shit out of him. This is gonna be awesome.
It didn't really seem like a troll. It seemed like he was having tech issues or something.
And maybe he was nervous. I don't know.
Okay, yeah.
He was gonna ask an amazing question. Answer.
Stefano's behind us. He's in the house. He's going to the Red Bull LAN. Obviously. Yeah. You know, he's an amazing guy. He's actually friends with most of us. We're having a lot of fun with him. He's going to hang out and train with us. It's a nice way to get the jet lag off before a major tournament. He'll then be spending time with us after the Red Bull LAN as well, if I'm not mistaken. And he has not joined the team. He has not signed a contract. His contract is up, like, in the fall, I think September. And EG is not the only team that would obviously not mind having Stefano amongst their players. And honestly, if that's a weird revelation to you, then you need to watch more StarCraft. That's it.
Yeah, he's still on Millennium. Millennium's absolutely fine with this. They paid for his flights to come over here. It's just a convenient place for him to stay. Good practice. Fun for everyone.
I think Slasherhead contacted the Millennium team manager and pretty much said that the contract was up in fall. So he did say people always want to play in a team house like EG, but that doesn't always produce results. Have they ever thought about switching to a more Korean type regimen? Is what he was kind of.
I think
for.
Those questions are so funny. Like, I actually read. Like I said, I follow everything StarCraft. Eventually, I'll become like the architect from the Matrix and grow out that beard and sit in that room with all those TVs. I'll just know everything that's going on. But for right now, I'll have to settle for just knowing most of it. And it's funny, all the comments, like when they're like, Thorzane bounced out early at MLG Arena. Guess that curse is starting to kick in. It's like, that's interesting. They were trying to say that when he took second to Lucifron in a major tournament with like severe Gosus. And like,
right.
The bottom line is, yeah, okay, there is an adjustment period. Some of these players have come up and down, but we actually just get more attention than most players, and the expectation is for all these guys to win every tournament. So I guess you could come away from that disappointed, but you probably shouldn't. And in individual tournaments, they do great. In team leagues, we have been doing quite poorly. Right now, we actually are doing really good, so there's no real excuse there. But I don't really I get why people are so hard on us about results and stuff like that. It's because they expect us to win everything. But I think it's pretty funny when you start to look at it. Like, DeMuslim is at number one in his group in NASL with only dropping a single map. Hume actually only dropped a single map. Huck is in the top of his group as well. Greg's in the top half of his. We had multiple players qualify for the MLG Arena, where it was mostly Korean-dominated. Like, we actually have pretty good results constantly coming out, and we're actually pretty happy with them. So it doesn't actually bother us when people keep like trying to chirp up that tree about how we're supposed to win everything.
Yeah, like Jeff said, it's actually almost all perception. Like, if you compare us and Liquid, obviously big fan favorites, EG, people, like, well, we don't combat or anything. Our CEO calls us the Yankees of esports. Like, a lot of people don't like us. And then we get called a team that uses mercenaries a lot in team leagues. We have a couple of Korean players. But if you look at all Liquid's recent clan wars, every single time, it's three Koreans and then usually Rhett. And we use two max. But Liquid doesn't get any shit for that. It's all perception. People like to be angry about us and like to be happy about Liquid and happy about Mouse Sports or whatever else. So if you actually look at it objectively, our players do just fine and more than that, more often than not.
They actually do the best, I think, as a team.
Yeah.
Outside of like Incredible Miracle. If you get down to the nitty gritty, we're the foreigners that win championships and we're getting our shit together in team leagues and individually our players are constantly qualifying for everything and taking out Nesty at major events and stuff like that. Like, we're pretty okay with what we're doing, actually. We'd like to do better, and we're always going to pursue it, but everyone by no means do you join this team and then become irrelevant. You actually become so relevant that every time you lose, people think it's the end of the world. Jesus.
They do. All right, we probably got a time for a couple more questions. I do not see Goat Lust.
Don't do it.
Would this
ghost.
Be the first?
Don't
would
do it.
The first.
We'd actually have to call consulate in Australia, like,
something bad happened to him. It's like Manifesto back in...
We need, like, the bat phone for Goat Lust. Just the direct red line.
I don't
line.
See his call, man. He's online, but there's no incoming call from the Goat Lust. Oh, there.
There we go.
Ask and ye shall receive. He just got tired because normally he just starts calling at the beginning of phones. And then he just... So maybe he's getting smart now. Like, they'll ask for it. They'll ask for it. All right, folks, as we're going to wrap things up, we've got our final caller of the night. We've got Goat Lust. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Oh, g'day, fellas. Got a little worried for a second there.
What's up? We were worried. Yeah, we're like, oh, shit, man.
What's oh, well, on? I thought, seeing as you fucking every week, you're like, oh, this Goat Lust calls the fucking whole show. I don't know why this motherfucker does this, because I only ever take
time,
him
actually.
At the end.
Well, you know, you do normally, don't you?
Even though I'm going to
get you at the end, you just always have it going anyway. It's all good. It's all good. How's it going, man?
Yeah, not bad. Not bad. Just been playing a lot of D3, you know?
Yeah, you and a lot of other people, man. Definitely.
Yeah, definitely.
It has diminishing returns, though. Like, it's not, like...
A fun game.
Like, I'm 60, I beat Inferno, like, I'm maxed out on all my gear, and at that point, it's just like, what do? Like, it's time to start playing.
Well, obviously, Real Money Auction House, paying users.
Sweet dude, I'm gonna make, like, $10 a week selling items, slaving away, like, get out of here. I could make more money.
No, you're going to make $10 a week because that's as far as your aspirations are going to fucking carry you, man. Yeah. You got to shoot higher than that, pay. All right,
here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to start a Diablo 3 China farming house. And
there you go. That's what I'm talking
about. A bunch of Chinese WoW players, and they're just going to farm items all day.
Expand the mind. That is wonderful. All right, so, Goat Lust, what's your question this week?
All right, so with the whole League of Legends versus StarCraft II thing, you know, we've sort of had this opinion for a while that it's all sunshine and rainbows, you know, the MMO crowd and whatever crowd is going to go into League of Legends, and it's not going to be a big deal for StarCraft II, you know. And then, you know, they took Moltrap away from us, and we weren't particularly worried about that. But you know, now OGS, you know, had to disband because they lost their sponsors to League of Legends. And I was just wondering, do you think this is something we've got to be worried about, or is it something we can't deal with? We just got to, you know, focus on StarCraft 2 being as good as it can get.
Honestly, one team, like the Korean StarCraft II teams, they're pretty fragile. They don't have a lot of big-name sponsors, unless their players aren't getting paid at all. To actually only lose one of them at all, whether it be to LoL or anything else, like I'm surprised that more teams haven't disbanded in the past in history of StarCraft II so far. I wouldn't be super worried about it.
I mean, on the flip side, if these teams do pick up League of Legends teams, and that actually encourages more sponsors to jump on board because they get more value because they've got League of Legends and StarCraft II, and I don't know, Sudden Attack or whatever. You know, traditionally, Korea has had Brood War teams and occasionally Warcraft 3 teams, and even those didn't mix that much, but now there might be an opportunity for one brand to spread across multiple games. I think from that perspective, that's great. Look at Absolute Legends. They started off as a League of Legends team. Now they've got StarCraft II guys on there. I'm hearing rumors that there are other League of Legends teams that want to pick up StarCraft II players. You've also got teams like Dignitas, who obviously dip in many, many games. So, you know, while you've also got the Gloom and Doom, you've also got that perspective as well.
Yeah, a little bit of cross-pollination,
well.
Eh?
Yeah, StarCraft 2 is obviously the go-to RTS, and it's going to be for some time. And we have Heart of the Storm coming out to revitalize it, you know, even to a greater extent. So I think attention for esports is attention for esports, and StarCraft 2 is definitely going to have a net benefit from it if all is really that big.
And, like, I don't think that LoL is ever really going to, like, overtake StarCraft II as the primary competitive game. It has a super casual atmosphere. Like, yeah, at the super high level, it's played competitively, but, I mean, StarCraft has this ability to generate superstars, right? I mean, you're following personal players, trials and tribulations through tournaments. There's so many different storylines, different big names. I don't really see that from the LoL community, and I don't think that the game as a whole, the way that it's constructed and the format, I just don't think it has the potential to completely overtake StarCraft. Even and they should be, right? Given the amount of numbers and users that they have playing the game, they have millions, and they're unable to do so. So I'm not really concerned about LoL becoming like the primary. And then also, LoL doesn't have that like one versus one, mano a mano, head to head aspect to it. It's team based. It's more casual. So all they're doing, I feel, is really bringing more to the table. They're bringing millions of viewers into esports, and by osmosis, hopefully, bringing us more viewers as a result. So I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing at all. I agree with Wheat. It's the cross pollination is awesome.
You know what's really exciting for me actually is like there's been a few times where this kind of conversation's pepped up where people are like, is MOBA going to start taking away from StarCraft II fame? Are people going to shift to LoL? There's been that kind of discussion. And, yeah, with OGS collapsing, largely in part because of not getting sponsorships, but, again, that's kind of like a, almost coincidental. There's other reasons as well, namely OGS not capitalizing on the players, losing MC, losing Nada, et cetera, et cetera. What's really cool to me is I'm an opportunity where I get to talk to a lot of these people in the different games. And, like, we had Melchior from he's EG Dota player. And one of the things he talked about is, like, he's like, I don't know if you guys know this, but everyone follows StarCraft. Like, we all play different games, but our sports center is StarCraft. I know about you guys. We follow you guys. We talk about you guys. We all play different games. We don't play StarCraft as much. But for us, the centerpiece, like, the coming home of esports is StarCraft. That's where we kind of look at it. We get excited about it, and then we take that excitement, and we go to our games and try to raise our professionality as well, if that's even a word. And to me, I take tremendous pride in that. So, like, when people start talking about LoL has these amazing numbers and they're doing this awesome thing, I don't look at that as a separate event that could threaten StarCraft 2. I look at that as, like, the culmination of multiple games doing really well and unifying in common ground and starting to raise and create a legitimacy with something we don't have right now.
Yeah, it's like different sports within the whole esports genre, right?
Yeah.
StarCraft 2 is a separate sport. LoL is a separate sport. And the more that they all come up and the more esports become socially acceptable, it's just a great thing for everyone across the board.
And there will be times when sponsors dip out from one to the other. And I don't look at that as combative or predatory. Like, I really would hold OGS responsible. I don't know the finer workings, but I look at that team and I say, how the hell do you not take this Korean team that has really captured the interest and the excitement of the foreign scene and not grab new sponsors for over a year? if there's other things at play that I don't know about, then I apologize for my ignorance. But at the end of the day, given the information I do have, I don't actually accept all Solar sponsors we had to die as an acceptable reason for why that team didn't work out. There's other teams that did not lose their sponsorships to LoL teams or to LoL itself, and they're doing great. And we're talking about Heart of the Swarm, we're talking about Brood War teams coming over, we're talking about Kespa. As far as I'm concerned, the absolute Cadillac of esports that is StarCraft II right now, whether Slasher likes it or not, is actually going to get bigger, and it's going to become more of the Cadillac. And I hope that that feeds into the other games, and I hope sponsors go, well, shit, if that's working there, maybe we can grab a really professional, good organization in this other game and try to do the same thing. Maybe it's becoming a legitimate consumer event and sport for people.
All right. I think those were all very good opinions there. Goatlust, as always, thank you.
Yep.
I have a question for you. What class do you play in D3?
Well, I've actually been playing a monk, unfortunately.
Why unfortunately?
Well,
because he wants to roll a demon hunter or a wizard.
Well, melee's clearly not exactly great in Inferno, that's all.
Ah, I see. I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, sir, thank you very much. Right. Have a great weekend, week,
yep,
et cetera.
You guys too.
Peace out.
Catch you later.
Bye-bye. Coming up next, we have, what do we got? We got the Evil Geniuses Masters Cup. And
Slayers versus Team Liquid.
Tonight, Slayers versus Team Liquid, that's right.
That's a crazy big match, man.
That should be a good one, I think. Should be a good one. Let's wrap up, guys. Final thoughts. We're going to start with you, Pain User. Take it away.
All right. Thank you very much, everybody, for tuning in. Thanks, guys, for having me on the show. Thanks, Weed, for hosting. Please follow me on Twitter, @PainUser, and shout-outs to my team, Check6, and our sponsors, TT Esports, PureTrack, and End of Reality. And I'll see you guys tomorrow for EGMC. Have a good day.
Awesome. Greg? They're filming a major motion picture behind you. But...
Greg's like, what the fuck?
Thank you, everyone, for everything. Follow me on Twitter, @Idrajit. You can basically link to everything else I do via that. And then thank you to Team Evil Geniuses, all our sponsors, Intel, SteelSeries, Monster, Kingston HyperX, Beyond Gaming, and Sapphire. Thank you for watching.
I kind of want you to just scream, like, fuck you, really loud, like something just, but no, they're dissipating. Someone said, what's that lady hooked up to? We'll be like, you ever seen that machine gun in Aliens?
She's just a door, man. She, like, comes out of the walls and does things. She's a robot.
Oh. In control.
A couple things. I am currently trying to create a local Arizona Warhammer 40,000 tournament that will take place monthly. So if you're anywhere near Arizona and you collect Warhammer 40,000, please pay attention to my tweets because I'll be organizing that. And I'd really like it if this was a meet-and-greet-slash-selfish opportunity for me to play Warhammer. I've decided the machine puts its models together entirely too slow, so I'm actually trying to leave the house with my obsessive hobby and take it on the road, make it really beneficial for StarCraft fans and Warhammer fans alike. So that'll happen later. We're in tournament season right now. Like, it's actually probably not going to happen for a while. We've started again streaming our practice sessions. That's only going to go on probably for the rest of this week, and then after that it's going to be closed off because we're going to get too close to MLG. But a lot of streaming will be coming out of us at Twitch TV. I'm EG in control there. Greg is Idrajit. And the Muslim streams as well. I think he's just a Muslim.
No, mine's EG underscore Idra.
EG underscore Idra, I apologize. So do check out those streams. And we're going to be doing some awesome stuff. We have Thorzane in the house. I'm going to try to get a show match between Thorzane and maybe our special guest, Stefano, or Huck, or somebody that we normally wouldn't get to see play as much. So hopefully that'll happen. More on that later. Obviously, I'm not official, so that may never actually happen, and you can just get mad at EG for that, because they would be the ones that screwed that over. For me personally, follow me on Twitter, EG Control, please. I'll be at Anaheim, and I'm playing really, really good as far as I'm concerned, so I'm really excited. And then I can tell you that I will be at DreamHack, although I can't tell you the fashion just yet, so if you're in Europe and you're going to go to Sweden, please come say hi. And then outside of that, thanks to my team, Evil Geniuses, our sponsors that Greg fired off, my lovely fiance Anna, and I really like pasta.
Right on. I want to say happy anniversary to my wife, who is now put up with me for 8 years this morning. And then, like, another 15 before that. So, happy anniversary, Adi. Coming up next, we've got the Evil Geniuses Masters Cup. It is Slayers versus Team Liquid. Guys, thanks for another great show. Inside the Game, episode 43. We'll see you next week. This weekend, we do have the Red Bull Battlegrounds. We've got a couple other events. We'll be talking more about those on Live on 3 tomorrow. Also be interviewing our champion of the MLG Spring Arena, Violet. So make sure to tune in. If you've ever seen the LO3 interview with Violet before, it was quite good. So I expect another great one from him. But thanks for joining us. Coming up next is the Evil Geniuses Masters Cup. Big shout out to our sponsors, SteelSeries, Monster Energy, and Six Pool Gaming. We'll see you next time. We're out of here. Peace.
Peace.